American businesses need more skilled workers. How do we find talent and develop it? And how do we create opportunities for everyone in our society to find a good job and build a rewarding career? You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a nonprofit media company telling stories about the future of work, the future of education, and closing the job skills gap. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. Joining me today on Work in Progress is Jake Hirsch Allen. He's with LinkedIn Learning. He's the North America Workforce Development and Higher Ed System Lead. And basically what that means is he's at the intersection of higher education, the future of work, and workforce development. Jake, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We were talking a little bit earlier that you have spent more than a decade looking at education and working in education and learning and workforce. Tell me how you got started in that.
It's been a bit of a winding journey. I was actually a public international lawyer to begin. I was working with international war criminals in The Hague and Cambodia, working at the Supreme Court of Israel, really trying to figure out how to create impact at scale, and became quite disillusioned with first our public international legal systems, then came back to North America, worked in intellectual property law, and again got disillusioned, but sort of found my niche when I was asked by a few friends who had recently started a software development company to help them found a software development bootcamp. That's to say, I helped them create what is now Canada's largest school, training in a short period of time individuals with almost no training in technology to become software developers.
Is that online or is that in person?
It's in person. It's in six cities across Canada. We graduate more developers than almost any university in the country. And it was a great exercise in beginning to understand what is working and what is not working in post-secondary education and education more generally. Overlapping that time, I was teaching at a university nearby called McMaster University, and the contrast between those two was pretty stark. I still was frustrated in both instances with the lack of social impact that we were having. And I got lucky when I was doing the intellectual property law work. I had worked on a bunch of access to medicines projects, and former UK Prime Minister, now UN Special Envoy for Education, Gordon Brown, reached out to my boss at one of those IP projects called the Health Impact Fund. And he said, can you take the same thinking that has been so successful in increasing access to medicine and instead apply it to education? Can online learning work for disadvantaged populations? And so that's really when I got started on the project that for the past 5 years at LinkedIn has become my obsession, which is to say, how to get online learning to work for disadvantaged populations.
Tell us about what is offered on LinkedIn Learning right now. You've been, like you said, you've been doing this for a few years. So what, if I went onto the site, what would I be seeing? And how is that going to help me find a job?
Happy to. So the two key factors that have combined on LinkedIn are, first, the labor market information that comes from what we call our economic graph, which is the data that comes from individuals' LinkedIn profiles, from all of the jobs that companies are posting on LinkedIn, and even that we're pulling in from databases like the National Association of Workforce Boards and National Labor Exchange, and even from the communications and conversations that are happening on the platform around employment, skills, et cetera. And so you combine all that data and you have arguably the most up-to-date and granular database of labor market information on the planet. And so that's one piece. The other side is the content. And about 5 years ago, LinkedIn purchased lynda.com, one of the premier online learning companies. And as a result of owning the largest film studios north of Hollywood, we're now able to produce content that is based on that skills data. So we know what skills are most in demand. And we can produce now around 2,000 courses a year in seven languages, teaching individuals how to learn those skills in order to prepare them for jobs.
What kind of skills are the most in demand now? And give me maybe an example of one of the classes that someone could take to get those skills.
Absolutely. They're split really interestingly between what used to be called soft skills and now are more often called human or foundational skills and technical skills. Our most watched course is almost always Microsoft Excel, a software program that I struggle with all the time. And then on the sort of human or foundational side, there are honestly the usual list of essential skills, critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork, creativity, et cetera. And it's really the intersection of those two that I think are going to prepare individuals best for the future of work. And one, I think, important thing to note here is while I do believe we have amongst the best content online to learn those skills, a lot of them, certainly the human skills, have to also be taught in person. And so a lot of what we're working on now is the vast majority of post-secondary institutions in North America now leverage LinkedIn Learning to teach. And what they're doing is they're flipping the classroom, right? They're ensuring that in an actual classroom environment, students are able to practice those human skills or apply those technical skills. They're using Excel to build a discounted cash flow analysis with a group of other students in order to build a small business. And then the students at home are able to watch our videos and catch up or do homework in advance of that project.
Are people learning things that get them certifications?
Absolutely. So we have a growing number of certifications. And one thing to note is the vast majority of people using LinkedIn Learning right now are actually within corporations. So while we work with post-secondaries and we're beginning to work with workforce development organizations and governments for their own employees, a huge percentage of the folks already using LinkedIn Learning are corporations using it for the professional development of their employees, from small businesses to the Fortune 500. And they're doing so really right across the different use cases of skills development. So it could be everything from IT support, helping individuals with how to use a given piece of software, or it could be individuals fundamentally learning the skills for their next job within an organization, moving up into management and learning those skills, or trying to change jobs completely and reskilling as a result of a change in the labor market.
If I was, pick a company, Acme, I'm sure there's really something called Acme out there. but if Acme had some courses and I wanted to work at Acme, is there access to a course like that?
So it depends on the company. To get back to your question about certifications, we have a growing number of them. So for instance, the Project Management Institute creates its own content. As an example, they have created all of the content that relates to project management on our platform. And in fact, it is the content that prepares you for the PMP exam, which then has to be administered usually in person. But it's that kind of certification content where another example is either Google or Microsoft or Adobe's certifications. They're all on LinkedIn Learning. All of the content to prepare for those certifications is on our platform. And when you complete a course, you can, of course, add the badge to your LinkedIn profile or somewhere else. But the number of employers who are actually creating our content is growing by the day. And in fact, the vast majority of our content comes from experts, sometimes at an employer, sometimes at an educational institution, sometimes within government. And we fly them to those studios I mentioned earlier, where they record the content and then are remunerated through royalties based on the number of individuals watching their videos.
So you're working with companies and experts and they're creating the content. Are you vetting it in any way or is it vetted through them because this is what they need? They're the experts on it.
It's absolutely a collaborative process. So we begin with a broad idea based on a combination of our data, our labor market information of what skills we want to be teaching. And we actually have a group of curators who are ensuring that it's a coherent educational flow with learning pathways based on a combination of that data and instructional learning leading practices. And then those individuals work with the experts to ensure that the way that they teach meets the highest pedagogical standards, is in a consistent format across all of our LinkedIn Learning courses, and can flow so that if you have individual videos, at this point, hundreds of thousands of 1 to 3 minute long individual videos combined into the 15,000 or so courses across 7 languages. And then those courses are in turn combined into learning pathways. An individual can flow through many, many hours of a learning pathway going from, say, graphic designer to user experience designer or retail employee to customer service representative. and do so in a seamless fashion across different experts or instructors.
Do you have to have a LinkedIn profile to do this? And is there a charge? Generally, is there a charge if it is not through a company?
It's a great question. So an individual absolutely has to pay for LinkedIn Learning if they sign up on their own. But part of what I'm trying to do in my capacity as a higher education and workforce development system lead is specifically to work with governments to pay for entire systems, because we were realizing that small institutions were struggling to afford LinkedIn Learning, whereas big organizations like a large university, because they were purchasing a larger number of licenses, were much more easily able to afford it. And yet, many of the institutions doing the most important skills development, think community colleges as an example, were the ones who weren't able to afford it. And so what we did is we worked with the government to purchase across the entire system. So for instance, in Ontario, the government purchased 1 million licenses for every faculty, staff, and student across 45 colleges and universities. And the result has been hundreds of thousands of individuals, I think over 300,000 individuals just in the past couple of years, have watched over 4 million videos in what we think is amongst the most skills development ever done per dollar.
That's very impressive. And it's also, it seems like this is also helping people who might not necessarily have the access that, you know, to these skills that will bring them up into a middle class job.
I think that's exactly it. One of the lessons that we learned, because to be frank, LinkedIn hasn't really been in the workforce development game for very long. But as part of that Ontario project and as part of a bunch of work that our economic graph team has been doing with state governments in the United States, we learned that the people who often were benefiting most were those with the least access to skills. And so if, for instance, we're able to provide broader access for people with disabilities or formerly incarcerated individuals, for Indigenous Canadians or newcomers to the US, then those individuals can go online and on their own upskill with, of course, in-person support for other aspects of their social or human services. And then they can learn the skills that are most in demand with recommendations based on our labor market information and get into jobs more quickly. So specifically, we're trying to flip how LinkedIn in the past has been accessed primarily by, for instance, white collar professionals, and now really targeted beyond those professionals to the individuals who need those skills the most.
And now, given what's going on with the coronavirus and people are home and they're, a lot of people are working and a lot of people are starting to be laid off, you guys are offering, you've unlocked some courses for people who might be at home and have the time to look at them. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So this is a really challenging time, we know, for so many people around the world. Obviously, you and I are likely speaking. I'm certainly at home. I assume you are as well.
I'm at home too.
And so, you know, to keep busy and to keep productive, we think one of the most effective uses of one's time is to upskill, is to spend that time thinking about what do you need next in your career. What do you need even in your current job, but aren't able to necessarily do because during the day you've been actually undertaking the functions of that job, and then spend some of your time at home watching online videos and learning those skills. And so what we've been trying to do is we've had inbound requests from governments and post-secondary institutions really right around the world. I focus, of course, on North America, and you know, whether it's the state of California that we've been speaking to or the University of North Carolina system, just in the past few days, we've begun to both form more of those system agreements or begin the negotiations around more of those system agreements that I was referring to earlier, but also, as you mentioned, unlock some courses, ensure that there is access to some of the online learning content that is most relevant to individuals during this crisis so that they can access it for free, even if they don't have a paid license to LinkedIn Learning. And specifically, the courses that we've unlocked relate to remote work. So we have a playlist that we can link to, focused specifically on how one can work from home, how one can manage teams working from home, etc. Another set of unlocked courses trying to help teachers move their content online quickly. And that list of courses was specifically developed in coordination with the University of North Carolina system, but should apply really to any higher education institution looking to quickly move its content from in-person teaching to online teaching.
If I'm listening and I want to know how to access this, walk me through it.
So we've got on the LinkedIn Learning blog, both of those playlists posted in the past week. So if you just Google LinkedIn Learning blog, you should get it as your first hit, and you'll see one article on remote work, another article on moving teachers' content online. And then if you want a broader piece on how LinkedIn is responding to the crisis, on the core LinkedIn blog, there's more material there, for instance, on how we as a company are reorganizing in order to ensure continuity, ensure that our employees are supported, and ensure that our members are supported.
Have you mostly worked online already or remotely already, or is this new for you right now?
It's actually quite new for most of our employees. We've, of course, had some working remote, and I think it's honestly been easier for us than most companies because so much of our work does relate to the online world. And so we've been using video conferencing, we've been using email and a variety of other digital tools to communicate almost exclusively, even when we're in an office. So for instance, you know, I'm based here in Toronto, the team I work with are exclusively in the United States, and they're really distributed from coast to coast and from the north to the south of the United States. So even if I've been in an office, I've been using the remote work tools for many years now, which I think has made it much, much easier for us than many of my colleagues or friends, I should say, working for other companies outside of LinkedIn.
If you had one piece of advice, what would it be to maximize your productivity now that you're working at home?
I think the ability to ensure both the social and professional aspects of life are balanced is going to be essential. The fact that all of a sudden we aren't interacting on a day-to-day basis in the same way means that I think we should be taking time at the beginning or end of every call to check in on people's human side, to check in on what is it that's, whether it's their family or pets, the food that they're eating, or the temperature in their home that's, you know, keeping them happy or bothering them. Because often when one has an online meeting, those niceties can be skipped over much more quickly than they would in person.
And what's making you happy as you're there? What's keeping you sane?
I think there's two things. Honestly, I'm so lucky to be able to do exactly what I've wanted to do for many years now. I've sort of crafted this role to serve the populations that I wanted to serve, and I'm thankful to LinkedIn for having given me the opportunity to do that. So the fact that on a day-to-day basis, I can help people specifically related to this crisis gives me a huge amount of energy and excitement. And the fact that my friends all around me are supporting with an outpouring of a variety of means of food and phone calls, of going for a run while social distancing, of course, or just exchanging drinks. There's a bunch of colleagues and other networks that I'm part of. There's something called the League of Entrepreneurs and the BMW Responsible Leaders Foundation, all of which are organizing meetups now on Zoom where people do drinks or people share stories.
The virtual happy hour.
Exactly, the virtual happy hour. And maybe I think there is a silver lining that I'm extremely excited about the prospect of for this terrible disease, and then hopefully it can overwhelm the deaths that it will inevitably cause. And that silver lining is that I think it really is bringing together people. It's creating social cohesion in a way that I haven't seen in my lifetime. The social impact organizations and the networks of people who are oriented towards helping the most disadvantaged populations all of a sudden have a focus and an energy and a collective impact that, again, I've never seen before. And I'm excited to see that continue and grow in the coming weeks and months.
I agree with you totally. And mine is getting out twice a day to go for a walk with my daughter, who lives with us.
Amazing.
And walk our neighborhood. We go in a different direction each time we go out.
Beautiful.
And go a little bit further and come back. And it just clears our head, and it gives us a purpose other than sitting at the computer.
It's just so I can picture it, if you don't mind me asking, what neighborhood are you walking through, or what city are you walking through?
I'm walking through Beverly Hills.
It's, oh, beautiful.
apartments, and it's beautiful, a lot of beautiful trees, a lot of beautiful flowers. And today, the direction we went in, we went by an orange tree. So that
beautiful.
Was very cool.
A little bit more pleasant than chilly Toronto.
Yeah, I'll put that picture on the page with the podcast so everybody can see my orange tree that
Amazing.
I walked by. Thank you, Jake. I really appreciate you joining us. And I love that you guys are opening up all these classes for people so that they can use these moments to think a little bit ahead past where we're at now. I also think it could be an opportunity for people to take the time to learn something new that they wanted to learn but never had the time before.
Agreed. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all of the amazing work that Working Nation does as well.
Thank you. And that's Jake Hirsch-Allen, who is North America Workforce Development and Higher Ed System Lead for LinkedIn Learning. You've been listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief for Working Nation. Our producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Melissa Panzer and Joan Lynch. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you later.